Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast by radio amateurs with a focus on homebrew electronics. We get together on the internet to swap ideas about radio construction projects. Our website is www.soldersmoke.com. Please send feedback to soldersmoke, that's one word, at yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke. Yeah, good morning. Welcome to Solder Smoke 58. It's Sunday, the 13th of May. A little bit later this morning than our normal hour. It's 0700 Greenwich Mean Time. Yeah, and this is Solder Smoke. I want to open up with just some comments on Ham Radio Brotherhood, on the fraternity that we're in. It's amazing. As I travel around the world with my job, I meet hams from all over the world, and of course meet many more over the internet and occasionally actually on the air. And I'm always struck by how our stories are all so similar. How we got into this crazy hobby, how we've stuck with it over the years. And it's really a global thing. You'll find people in the most far-off and remote corners of the world who, for some strange reason, like us, got interested in radios, usually at a very tender age. A while back, I came across the website of a ham, and his particular site really, for me, illustrated this phenomenon very well. It's the website of Sierra Tango 2 November Hotel. I'm going to pull it up on the screen here while I'm talking about him. It's Dr. Nader Abid El Hamid Ali Omar in Sudan, in Khartoum, in Sudan. And now this is Rare DX, guys. This is a far off place. And as you go to his website, there's a picture of him on, looks like, the front steps of his house. But then I go to a page called My Ham Background, and there it is. There's a picture of him as a little boy, taken in 1966 on a river cruise. It must be on the Nile, with his family. And you notice the family sitting there. Everyone is enjoying the family event, but our hero ST2NH, looking to be about 6 years old, is off in the corner of the picture, and what is he doing? He is tuning a radio receiver. It says here, and the caption he says here, the small boy at the picture is me, 1966, at a river cruise. The only thing got my attention is the radio. See how he is concentrating to listen. He does. He looks. He's got that look on his face like he's pulling in some rare DX on 20 meters. You know, and I think almost all of us have similar kind of stories, how at a very young age we had an odd interest in things electronic. I really enjoyed ST2NH's page. It's got all kinds of great stuff in there, kind of projects that we all are involved in. There's double sideband rigs. There's different things that he built. It says here, I knew that the old timer can fix their own gear. So they knew well the rules, and they knew how things worked. Can I do what they did? Sure, but I need to know all the story from A to Z. I started reading. I got a ton of books in electronics, radio, computer science, and physics on my way. All kinds of great quotes in there. It's a great page. Let me see here. What else we got? His homebrew projects. You go to his homebrew projects page, and there he's got all kinds of great stuff. Crystal radios. It says here, my homebrew project started before I even knew amateur radio. I had grown up with a schoolboy's desire to do something marvelous. I started building up my project from school's physics books. I taught myself a lot of basic skills, step by step, by using whatever hardware available at my home. Even a simple thing like the difference between a bare wire and an enamel wired, I discovered after several trials of winding up an electromagnetic coil. No one helped me except my family's admiration. At that time, I was so eager to know more and more about the facts and rules of physics and electricity, and the real problem facing me was the lack of books and magazines. Oh, how much I suffered from that! Still, I can remember when I fixed up a Morse code telegraph key between two rooms at my home, and the first spark transmitter I built. Now I can listen to the world with my homemade radios. Well, fine business there, ST2NH, and thanks for providing us with a lot of additional evidence about the universality of our strange interest in radio and electronics. I'll post the link to ST2NH's page on the gadgeteer.us website, but you can find it very easily. Just Google ST2NH Sierra Tango 2 November Hotel. All right, so I got a real kick out of that. I'd come across the page a while back, but something got me thinking about it again, and I revisited it, and it's really worth a look. You know, fine business on being able to do some home brewing all on your own, self-taught in Khartoum. I mean, sometimes some of us think we have it tough trying to get parts. Well, let me tell you, there's somebody out there, always somebody else out there who's got a tougher situation. Yeah, speaking of projects and parts, I'm happy to report that my W7ZOI power meter project has come to a very successful conclusion. I told you last week that I had sort of been hearing in the back of my mind the admonition from Mike that he always used to tell me that I need to spend more time at the workbench and less time in front of the computer. So I started getting the sense that I was falling into that too much time at the computer status. So I think I told you last week I kind of rummaged around the junk box, and almost miraculously the W7ZUI power meter that Mike and Wes have been telling me that I need just started to come together. The key element in it, of course, was Thomas up in Norway sending me the chips, the logarithmic detector chip and an LM358 op amp. And with those chips and with the meter from the junk box and Radio Shack box from the junk box and the article by Wes and Bob Larkin, the things started coming together. And I had a long weekend last week. It was a holiday here, what the Brits call a bank holiday Monday. So I took advantage of the time and decided that I was going to actually build something. And let me tell you, it was really great. For those of you who haven't been, who like me have been kind of falling away from the workbench, I really recommend you to get back to it. There's a real therapeutic element to it. I think it's good for the ham radio's soul, just to build something. And this thing was a perfect weekend project because it went together in about 2 days. And yeah, I'm telling you, it looks really great. The thing that I'm struck about, the thing about this project that strikes me is that if you go out onto the web and Google W7ZOI power meter, first, you get lots of hits. Lots of us have built this project. The other thing that strikes me is when you go to the pages about the power meter, almost all of them look, the exterior, they look almost identical. They all use just about the same size Radio Shack box, the same Radio Shack meter, and everybody seems to have placed the BNC connector, the on-off switch, and the feed-through capacitor in exactly the same spot that Wes and Bob did on theirs. So someday off in the distant future when you know, archaeologists in the year 3500 are rummaging through these strange rooms and houses that have become known as ham shacks, they're going to find odd homemade devices all produced in pretty much the same physical form, and they'll wonder if it had some sort of religious significance, and of course they do. They come out of experimental methods for RF design, the Bible. So the project went together great, and it worked. It's one of these things that worked the first time I threw the switch after I built the power meter, and with nothing at all connected to the BNC input, the meter jumped up a bit. Now, of course, this is good news. The meter moves. Something happened. No smoke came out. There were no explosions. So in the homebrew business, I knew that I was really far ahead, really ahead in the game. Then I started thinking about why that meter popped up, why it moved. Well, and I figured, well, I need some calibration, I need some adjustment. But then I went to Wes's website, the Easy Street W7ZOI website, and he's got a couple of kind of addendum articles in there on this project. And in a couple of years, I read through them kind of quickly, and I got the impression that maybe what I was seeing was just the meter picking up some of the huge amount of just ambient RF that you'd expect in central London. So I figured, well, great, the thing is sensitive. And sure enough, if I take just a little bit of wire, just a tiny little bit of wire, and stick it in there into the BNC connector, the meter jumps up a bit further, and that definitely is picking up RF in the environment here. Wes points out that his location in Oregon, it's a very relative, it's a RF quiet location, so he doesn't get a lot of that. But well, in central London, there's a lot of RF here. So I first thought that this initial kind of movement of the meter when I turned the thing on must be just kind of ambient RF. But that read further. I went back and read Wes's website a little bit more carefully, and it's not. It's what I'm seeing there is just the noise in the components. I guess the noise, especially in the resistors in the input circuit to the logarithmic detector chip. This thing is so sensitive that it'll register readings down to negative 70 dBm. That's getting way down there. That's more zeros in front of the one than I can easily name. So what we're talking about here is essentially the power being generated by, I guess, thermal photons hitting those resistors in the input section, and the meter is so sensitive, and then that's what it's picking up, which I think is pretty impressive. I guess that's in a very real sense, we're down at the noise floor there. But so the meter came together the last weekend, and that was last weekend's success. And then, of course, inspired, you know, you get your, when you engaged in a good homebrew project, you get kind of a feeling in your hands that you want to continue. Your hands are kind of cut up a little bit. You got a couple little nicks in them and stuff. You've got a little bit more callus on your hands than you had when you started out, but they feel exercised. Like you feel a little bit more, you feel like you have a little bit more dexterity in your hands after you build something. So I wanted to continue, and then I decided that the thing to build next would be the 40 dB tap pad that Wes described and Bob describes in the QST article. Essentially, it's just a kind of a feed through device that taps off with a 40 dB drop the energy going through it. Now, here I ran into a little bit of trouble because I didn't have a lot of the components that that Wes described. So I just started rummaging around and looking for an appropriate enclosure, connectors. There's like four resistors in there. They were in the junk box. I couldn't find the kind of box that Wes used, but I had in the junk box a number of Altoids tins. Somewhere a while back, some of a colleague had heard that I could use Altoids tins, so I got a pretty good stockpile of them here. And I started realizing, well, you take two BNC connectors, you put them on the side, you put one down at the bottom for the output. Wes used a piece of brass to go between the connectors that would serve as, in essence, a kind of an inductor between the two. I didn't have that, but I figured a piece of one-sided PC board would probably come pretty close to the electrical characteristics, so that went in there between the input and the output connector. I didn't have the half-watt or one-watt resistors that that Wes used in his project, but since I'm operating at really low power levels, I figured the standard quarter watts would do. So in they went. And anyway, it turned out really nicely. And now I have a 40 dB pad kind of feed-through device and built in a very neat-looking Altoids tin. I want to give credit to Tony Fishpool, G4WIF, for, I guess, inspiring me in this direction with all of his great work using Altoids tins. And I felt really good about using an Altoids tin because in all my time here in the UK, I've never used that that famous box from the Curiously Strong Mints. So anyway, my 40 dB pad is now proudly housed in an Altoids tin with a big Made in Great Britain written across the front of it, indeed. All right. Okay, so now I have the thing here, and now it's time to calibrate it. And Wes talked about in the article about how you could use a calibrated signal generator, but and believe me, the signal generator technology that we have here at M0HBR is far, far from being calibrated. Actually, it's I think it's a Heathkit SG7. It's got tubes in it, valves in it, and man, it's really pathetic. Calibrated, it is not. I think it has two settings on the front, RF, more RF and less RF, or something like that. But in the article, Wes describes a way that you could use a low power transmitter for the calibration. So I pressed my trusty Heathkit HW8 into service, and what you do is you just put approximately 1 watt through the 40 dB pad, and that gives you one data point. You record the meter reading, and then I had in the shack from another project a 20 dB pad, so I put the 20 dB in line 20 dB pad in line, and that gave me another data point, and then I did it with just the 20 dB pad, and I got a third data point. So I printed out some graph paper and plotted the thing, and now I have a very nice representation of what how the meter readings correspond to the dBm levels coming out of this thing. A great project. It's neat, and I'm looking forward to using it to make all kinds of more precise measures and to get more fully involved in the experimental method described in Wes's great book. All right, so I encourage you guys, build some test gear. It's not as bad as I said it was, and I really enjoyed it. Next, it's going to be on to the current limited power supply. I've got to get going and order some parts so I can get this thing done before we pull up stakes and head off to Italia. All right, let's see. A couple other things here. Let's see. Let me pull up a web page. I wanted to tell you guys about a book that I've been looking at. We've lately been doing kind of book projects here, and I came across a great one a while back that I really liked. Let's see. I'll get it for you in a second. Oh, man. You can tell I'm kind of slow, going slow this morning. I think I have it on the Gadgeteer news page already. This is from Crystal Sets to Sideband. And here, we'll get it up in a second. Here, where is it coming? I'm all kind of slow on the uptake here. Let's see. Oh yeah, here we go. From Crystal Sets to Sideband by Frank Harris, K0IYE. I really like this book, and Frank was kind enough to send me a copy of it a few years back, and over the years I've printed it out and carried it around with me several times. It's a really great book for homebrewers. He's done a lot of work on it, and it provides some real great suggestions and insights and real-world stories on what it's like to progress from building crystal sets to building sideband rigs. In the book, Frank refers to the construction of a single sideband transmitter, the successful constructing of that kind of rig, as being akin to the receiving the Nobel Prize in ham radio. And he talks about the difficulties and the pitfalls that that come up. So check out the book. I have a link to it on the Gadgeteer.us, Gadgeteer News website. It's free. Frank has made this book available free of charge to the ham radio community, and all home brewers out there should take advantage of it and send a note of thanks to Frank. I really enjoyed the book. Some news came across the web here. I don't watch this show, but I know a lot of people do. It's this show 24 about the derring do of a some sort of anti-terrorist secret agent, but a note came across somewhere. I think I came across QRPL that, or maybe no, maybe I saw it on Slashdot or something like that. But the basic stamp chip that we've been discussing on and off here on Solder Smoke and a lot more on QRPL has apparently shown up on 24, and apparently the basic stamp chip is used in some way to hold the codes for launching some sort of horrible missiles. So anyway, yeah, I guess the pitfalls of basic stamp. See, it's better to stick with the analog stuff. You don't get in that kind of trouble with a with an HW8. I read an email last week about a UK ham who is using crystal radios for reception in actual QSOs on 80 meters, and I found a website here called Crystal Set DXing. It's a really nice page, and it describes how crystal sets are being used for broadcast band DX and ham radio DX. There's a lot of reports coming in from different parts of the world about how people are using this gear for shortwave listening and for actual ham radio QSOs. It's the website is homepage.ntlworld.com/lapthorn/crystal-htm. I'll try to remember to put that up on the Gadgeteer News page, but I think if you just Google Crystal Set DXing, it'll get you to it, and it's a very interesting page, so I'd recommend that. Let's see here. Bum, bum, bum. All right. Time for an important announcement here, gentlemen. This is your opportunity to contribute to Solder Smoke's efforts to provide useful information on important events to the homebrew and QRP community. A very important event is on the horizon. It's coming up. Most of us can't go. We're talking, of course, about Dayton, and more important, the 4 Days in May event. I wish I could go, but I can't. I'm over here in London, and the event is, as you know, in Dayton, Ohio. So that's a little bit outside my range, and I won't be going. So, and I think most of the people listening to the show won't be going either, but those of you who are going can help us maintain contact with the important events and the great people who are going to be present at the Dayton Hambention and the 4 days in May event. Solder Smoke is looking for a correspondent. Yes, indeed, we're looking for somebody who is going to attend these events, who would be willing to serve as our man in Dayton. What we're looking for is somebody who can bring some sort of recording device. It doesn't have to be fancy. Perhaps it could be the record feature in your MP3 player. We should have the technology here, guys, but we're looking for somebody who can go there and just record some short interviews with people who were involved in the Hambention and the 4 days in May event. There's going to be some of the most interesting and important people in ham radio and QRP and home brewing there. It'd be great to get some interviews from some of them, just some short clips, some comments on what's going on, maybe some kind of reports on interesting exhibits or stuff that's seen, or you know what we're talking about, the kind of stuff that Solder Smoke listeners would be interested in. Now, we don't want to have multiple Solder Smoke correspondents out there, and although I know that the demand for this position is going to be really enormous, I think we should keep it to probably just one correspondent. So, if you're interested in this and would like to serve as Solder Smoke's rep at the in Dayton and the 4 days in May event, send me an email, and we'll work something out. And you may be deputized as the official Solder Smoke correspondent in Dayton. I have to warn you, the pay is not good, but the fame and the gratitude of your fellow radio amateurs will be, I think, more than adequate compensation. So this could be fun. All we need is somebody who could record some stuff from Dayton and send it to me via email in a WAV file or an MP3, and I'll take it from there. I'll put some more info on this on the Gadgeteer.news webpage. Let's see, what else do we have on the list? Band sweep, yeah. Time for Solder Smoke band sweep. I've been so wrapped up. I've been wrapped up at the workbench, so I haven't been at the receiver. But on Sunday mornings here in the UK, on 80 meters, there's always some good kind of around the UK QSOs going on, and I like listening to them very much. Unfortunately, I don't have much of or any kind of an antenna up for 80 meters, so my reception is poor, and my transmitter strength would be even my effective radiated power would be pretty awful. So I don't get on the band that much myself, or ever lately, but I listen quite a bit. And this morning I found a very nice, regular QSO going on, just below 3.8 megacycles. And there was some good tech talk, antenna talk, amplifier talk, that kind of stuff. So I thought people would enjoy listening to this. There's also some interesting references to transatlantic QSOs and somebody that they've been talking to back in the States. So I'll put that on, and that'll be our Solder Smoke band sweep for this week.
Yeah, Roger. Well, thanks for that info. Take that full note. And the other thing is, I worked W8 Sugar quite often, and he's right over Michigan on this band, and he's probably one of the strongest signals coming out of that part of the country. Now, he said that he scraped back his earth and laid down a mat. He's got a four square. He laid down a mat, and that's what he's got. What it's all set up on this mat, and he's as strong as any of the stations on the eastern seaboard there. That's W8SS Joe. I wonder if you've worked him over.
Yeah, I heard the guy describing it. Martin, I think he actually had all the ground cleared. He had all the ground scraped, put the aerial up, put down the earth mat, re-turfed it, and the job was done.
Yeah, that's it. And he kindly sent his card over. It's a pretty four-sided type of thing, and it's photographed, massive photographs of massive aerials. But That seems to be the answer. That seems to be the answer. One huge mass of it.
Yeah, well, if you can afford it, if you've got the time to do it.
Well, this is it.
I remember doing one ground system at Manchester for the medium wave transmitter, and it was done on a landfill site. We laid all the earth wires down on the surface, and then they came and dumped all the rubbish on top, so we didn't have to bury them.
Yeah, that's it. I heard him say about this exercise he's done.
Yeah, copper, you see, is a good investment, isn't it? It's not likely to deteriorate in the ground. And when you think of the value of copper now compared to probably when he put it in, it was probably better than having money in the bank.
I think it was Leo or someone over there said that one of the scams at present, Tony, is they're going around these commercial broadcast stations and ripping up the copper radios.
Oh, I can believe that. I've known overhead lines stolen. They throw a chain over them, which is grounded to make sure it trips off, and then they cut the wires and remove them very quickly.
Do you know this guy, W8SS, do you know where he lives?
No.
How?
Hell.
Yeah, H-E-double-L.
Oh, well. That's amazing.
That's what the neighbours think.
I don't think he's got any, Dave.
Yeah, in East Africa, they used to steal the twin feeders going to the antennas when the transmitters were off. So to get around that, they used to put 240
volt
AC on them at night.
How long did it take to find that point out, Tony?
Cost a few lives.
Well, I guess it's probably better than a burglar alarm, Tony.
Oh yeah, they showed you, dear.
Yeah. I often thought of putting it on the doorknob on the house.
Oh, yeah, that's an offence.
You have to remember to switch it off at the right time, though.
Come home with a couple of pints under your belt.
Yeah, my brother used to be troubled by thieves. Once he had a workshop detached from his house, and it was broken into on several occasions, I think about four different occasions, and he got most frustrated, so he decided he would lay a booby trap, and he set this explosive charge, which was supposed to go off 3 seconds after the door was opened, and what he remembered, he needed something from his workshop, and he rushed along there, opened the door, and those were the longest 3 seconds of his life.
He probably did you remember the other kids thing, something and Gromit, Tony?
Wallace and Gromit, yeah.
Wallace and Gromit, he'd obviously been watching that, had he?
Oh, I think this preceded Wallace and Gromit. Anyway, he got a nasty burn and a lot of shrapnel on his legs. Yeah, that's what Martin said. Yeah, same station.
I mean, would it be considered legal to do a thing like that, Tony? I mean, it's a bit of bad luck when it backfires on yourself, but I mean, could you be prosecuted for it?
Oh, yeah, I'm absolutely sure you could.
Yes, you would. He did actually get
somebody with it, and apparently the recipient was injured because he left one footprint and one long groove in the mud as he left.
Oh man, that wasn't good enough. Gonna have a real gong here. Cover your ears, guys. All right, that should do it. It's not really. Something is wrong with the gong. Hold on. I know the gong is very important. The gong was even mentioned in our QRpedia. We have a QRpedia entry now, thanks to the owner of that site for putting it together. But he mentioned the gong, so I feel compelled to have a real good gong here. There we go. All right. There's a proper gong. Welcome to Solder Smoke Mailbag. All right. Got some interesting mail this week. A lot of it about the sub W7ZOI power meter. Don AC7FA points out that the article for the power meter is available on the ARRL.org website. So if you're looking for the article and thinking about building one of these, as you should, check out the ARRL.org website. Got a nice email from Bill NADT of Kanga Company. Bill has been performing really great services for the QRP and homebrew communities for many years. He's the GQRP club rep in the U.S. and does all kinds of great stuff for the hobby. And Bill points out that those who are interested in putting together the ZOI power meter can get a kit of parts from Kanga. And I think if you just go to his website, just Google Kanga Electronics, you'll get to the website there, and the kit of parts might be just what you need to get yourself on the W7ZOI power meter bandwagon. Paul M1CNK sends in a very nice set of emails pointing out that subsequent to the publication of the article by Bob and Wes, there are a number of kind of refinements or variations on the theme have come out. Some of them which feature digital readouts, and some have some I think some microprocessor-based refinements in there. So there are some kind of variations on the theme with the W7ZOI power meter. I stuck pretty much to the original schematic. I used a different voltage regulator, but other than that, mine is pretty much as the first article specified. But those of you who want to add a digital readout, there are some other schematics out there to show you how to do that. I think that's it for the mailbag. Yeah, a couple other things, but we'll leave those for next week. That's it, guys. It's kind of a bit shorter this week. As I said, I'm happy to say I've been spending more time at the workbench and less time at the computer, so that probably is why the show's a little bit shorter this week. But we'll say 7-3s from London, and thanks for listening to Solder Smoke. Please send us emails. Let us know what you think about the show. Any suggestions for improvements would be appreciated. I know folks would like to see more conversation like we had in the beginning, and I am trying to recruit some folks who could come in and talk to us. There's a lot of mic shy people out there who'd be great but don't want to step into the limelight or step into the solder smoke. But we'll continue our efforts, and hopefully we'll cajole some people to come on here and talk about workbench projects and home brewing. That's it for now. 7-3 from London.